Welcome to the India FinTech Diaries, the only podcast focused exclusively on the Indian FinTech market. I'm Elroy.
And I'm Hemant. In each episode, we dive into the latest trends, ideas, innovations, business models, and personalities that are shaping India's FinTech landscape.
We also invite amazing guests who are innovators and industry players that are driving the change that is helping make financial services more modern, innovative, and inclusive in India. Come join us as we explore the changing landscape of FinTech in India. Welcome to India FinTech Diaries, the show for all things Indian FinTech. I'm your host, Elroy.
And I'm your host, Hemant. Elroy, in the last few years, the entire landscape of retail investing in India has changed, from new products to old products in new avatars. The modern retail investor has a wealth of choices and the space is ever evolving. To understand how we got here and what's in store for the future, we have with us Satyan Kothari, founder and CEO at Cube Wealth. Welcome to India FinTech Diaries, Satyan.
Thank you for having me, both of you.
Satyan, you've had a very interesting journey so far. I noticed that you'd actually begin your entire career at Apple, and then you, of course, entered the world of digital payments and kind of conquered that space. And now you're looking at technology-enabled investing. So for the sake of our listeners, we'd love to hear a little more about you and know a little more about your entrepreneurial journey.
Absolutely, Elroy. So from a very early age, I loved building things. I remember my father's a mechanical engineer, and he used to design machines for his factory, and I used to peek over his shoulder to whatever he was designing, ask questions, have ideas which were probably silly, but he always encouraged them. And that led to a very early age of getting a Lego set that I think I squeezed every little last brick out of it, played with it for 8 years with one set, which is an alien concept to kids today who get an abundance of toys.
Right.
And then absolutely stumbled into computer programming in the eighth grade. So it's been layers and layers of building, and just the building, the nature of the building changes. So starting companies was part of that journey. So I did my master's in computer science in the US at Stanford. Then I interned at Apple while I was there. Worked at a couple of companies, and at 26 started my first company. By no means was the journey perfect. I would call it highly imperfect, maybe. Made lots of mistakes, realized I needed to learn a lot of things. But fortunately, or maybe it's a streak of masochism, that I kept going at it, one company after another. So I actually had three companies before I even moved to India and started getting into the world of fintech. Three companies in Silicon Valley. So it's been a long journey. It's about five companies deep now with Cube Wealth, but each one is in a very different domain. I believe life is short. You should try many things as opposed to become a domain expert only in one thing and go deeper and deeper. But that's just my personality. So I've been enjoying it. It's been everything from SaaS to design consulting to social impact e-commerce to, as you said, digital payments with Citrus Payments, and now Cube, which is in the investing world. So yeah, it's been an excellent and painful journey.
Satyan, I was also hearing to some earlier conversations that you have had and interviews that you have given, and there were some very interesting anecdotes related to Citrus Pay and PayU deal. Can you give more details on that deal as well?
You know, so we started Citrus out with a very simple playbook, right? Saying that software is going to be the game changer in payments. And both of you know the payment space well, so you know it was BillDesk, CC Avenue, the process behind before we started Citrus. So we came with a software-first mindset, saying you had all these failures in the pipes that connect, make payments go through. How can we do retries automatically? How can we have payment gateway switching at the back end depending on how rates change for merchants? So that was our strength. Halfway through the journey in about 2013, I remember we were, I was speaking with Jitendra at a conference in Vietnam. And we started talking about why in our sales team, we were facing so much pressure from people like PayU who were undercutting us because they had deeper pockets. People like BillDesk who had deeply entrenched relationships that were hard to shake. And we said, where can we go that these guys are not strong in? And I remember taking a long walk there, and at that time the India mobile commerce market was at 2%, and I was just thinking to myself, well, this is a number that has to go up. There's no other way. I mean, India people are going to afford cheap smartphones before they ever get to laptops or tablets, even if they get there. So we took a very early bet around 2013 to start building SDKs for mobile payment gateways. And that became a strong element for us as a differentiator in the market. So we knew we were being a thorn in the sides of PayU and BillDesk already. And then funnily enough, it was 2015 at Money 2020 in Copenhagen that I got randomly invited by a VC to attend a PayU party. And my first reaction was, I shouldn't be there. These are our biggest competitors. And he said, come on, it's you know, nobody cares, it's a party. So I show up and I see Laurent, who was, I think, I don't know if he's still the global CEO of PayU, but at that time he was. And we just talk and he sees my badge and he's like, you're the guy making me get headaches in India. So we just started on that note of just like, let's riff at each other. And we just got along really well. And we were showing each other the UI of different apps that we loved at the party itself. And, you know, it was like, it was competitors, but respectful competitors. And we got along. So the next day, Laurent says, you know what? Tomorrow, let's get a glass of wine. He's French, of course. That's how all meetings happen. I said, sure, why not? The conference is mega boring. I'm happy to do any excuse to get out of the beds. So I show up in the evening and I don't realize it, but he has his entire senior team there. And I was like, I thought we were just getting a glass of wine, but apparently they wanted to understand what we were doing in India, what our plans were. And, you know, with you guys, the way I am, pretty transparent, I was the same with him. I was like, you know, it's going to be a tough journey. I think India is going to boom, but we're going to keep competing with each other. We're going to keep playing on our software strengths. And, you know, it just seeded it that way. He was in touch once in a while. And then a few months later, we had a banker who had very deep connections with them, who was helping us raise our CVC. And the banker came back and he's like, hey, would you guys want to talk to them about some potential deal? Because Laurent keeps asking about you guys. I'm like, well, why not? So the end of that story was, it was a simple, I gate crashed a party, led to a glass of wine, and a year and a half later, we had what still I think is the biggest cash fintech deal in India at $130 million.
Pretty expensive glass of wine for Laurent.
I don't think he's regretting it. I think they went public with their global portfolio. So,
yeah, of course.
Yeah, he played it smart too, because he wanted to build a emerging markets portfolio. I think otherwise, in terms of just pure numbers, as we saw, even the BillDesk deal didn't go through, right? It just doesn't make sense yet, especially with UPI. But I think he played it smart with the bigger picture, and that worked out well for us.
I think, yeah, the deal worked out well on both sides. That's what's count, and these are rare. So if there is a win across that area for both the players, that's fantastic.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the keyword rare, and I remember when we got the proposal, you know, rightfully everybody was thinking whether we should take it or no. And maybe I was the only one convinced we absolutely had to. So I remember talking to Mohit at Sequoia, talking to Theru at BNext, to Amrish and Jitin. I said, guys, I understand the emotions involved. I know we are on an upswing. We can make this a bigger company, but this is a game-changing amount in India. Deals don't happen. We had only raised 20-odd million, so everybody was going to make money. It was all cash. Our team members were going to make a lot of money, which would have changed their lives. So I remember lots of calls with a little nervousness on my end saying, are we seriously not going to take this deal? Is somebody going to take it? Oh, those were fun few days.
Yeah. And Satyan, it seems you have a knack of catching the waves when they start. So you were right on the money when the payments process was starting. And then it comes to Wealth, which is your latest venture. So if Elroy and Satyan, you see the equity investing shown strong growth in the country. I think there are about 10 million Demat accounts that were added in the first 6 months of last year. Taking the total tally for the last 2 years to about 30 million. And even Amfi reported that retail AUM grew by like 30% in November 23 as compared to November 22. And even on the SIP side, if you see, which is the mode of investment that a lot of people are now adopting, about 3 million SIPs were registered in November 23 alone. And earlier, I think there was a downturn on the fixed return avenues like FDs, but those are back in vogue with the rate environment change. And then there are new investment methodologies of P2P loans, invoice factoring. So there's so much happening in the wealth area. And with the penetration, Satyan, which is like so small right now, it is just going to go up, as you said, it was for mobile commerce payments at that point of time. So since you have seen this change in behavior, so what's your view on what's driving this change in investing behavior and where do you see this going as far as the country is concerned?
That's an excellent question. So if you think back, right, even as little as maybe 15 years ago, Indians didn't invest in the stock market. We had so many scams happening in the 90s, if you guys remember Harshad Mehta scam, etc., that it was supposed to be the game of the insiders, not for everyday people. So we love to put our money in jewelry, gold, real estate. Then we had, I think we started seeing the first phase of people saying, maybe I should dabble in the markets, especially as the economy opened up and companies were growing. And what you just rolled out as statistics is showing the acceleration of that, the snowball effect, where people are very comfortable. Everybody assumes you have to have some mutual funds now, right? 10 years ago, that wasn't the case. So I think a lot of it is multiple factors. One, we are a rapidly growing economy, which has a middle class, upper middle class that has extra money to invest. Second, I think there's that fear of missing out, which is if I don't invest, I just save in the traditional ways. I will not manage to keep up my lifestyle with my peers. You know, Charlie Munger often says that more than greed, it's envy that drives decisions. And this is a very big element here. Third is the regulators have done a fantastic job. Very often, we as Indians love to complain about the government and regulators. But here, when it comes to SEBI, RBI, I think they've infused so much faith in the system that people are comfortable, that our money will be relatively safe if we put it in there. It won't be scammed out very easily. So a lot of these things have come together to say we must invest. Now, that's only part two, right? There's the third way, which is how do I invest properly? Which is, I don't think a lot of people have figured out. If you see the big boys in the wealth tech space, whether it's the Zerodhas, the Grows, they are DIY platforms. Hey, come in. What do you want to buy? Go for it, right? And I wish investing was that easy. If it was that easy, everybody would be rich. So I think we are going to wait for the third way, which is, I've tried investing on my own. Looked easy. I saw the billboard saying this mutual fund had 40% returns last year. I went and bought it. Somehow it didn't give me 40% this year. What's going on? So I think third wave is where Cube Wealth is focused, saying how do we guide you to build a proper balanced portfolio for short-term, medium-term, long-term based on your risk profile, based on how many kids you have, how many independent parents you're taking care of, what your expenses are. But also, very importantly, how do we, in that jungle of options out there, find really high-quality assets and advisors for you? And in India, this is the most exciting part right now because you have so many fintechs disrupting banks, as you said, with invoice discounting, P2P loans, etc., that you have alternatives of what you can invest in. The problem is the alternatives get too complex and too confusing. Right? So you have more than 1,500 mutual fund schemes. How does an ordinary person start? RBI has more than 50 plus P2P registered companies. Which one do you pick? How do you invest? So this is going to be the fun part. And it's going to be a great journey because the next 10 years, if the economy keeps doing what it's doing, there is money to be made for sure if everybody plays it smart.
You know, Satyan, I have a confession to make. I was probably one of your earliest customers when CubeWell first launched. I distinctly remember you getting on a WhatsApp conversation with me and my assigned RM to help clarify details of some of the products you had at CubeWealth. Unfortunately, then I couldn't continue with my investment journey with CubeWealth, and that was simply because of restrictions on trading and investments I had at my then employer. But nevertheless, I followed CubeWealth's journey over the last couple of years. And today I've seen it's grown to over 18,000 crores in AUM and has had a good track record of delivering for its customers in terms of returns. For the sake of our listeners, it would be great if you could explain to us what CubeWealth is all about. And I'm also equally curious what prompted you to set up CubeWealth fresh from your exit at Citrus.
So the problem statement we are trying to tackle is the fact that if you are an affluent middle class professional in India, you have nobody willing to help you and give you great advice. Right? Who do you go to? And we all grew up in middle class families, me and my whole team. I remember my father used to struggle where to invest. It was the same problem with us. Who do you go to? Today you can go to your bank RM who has a quarterly quota of which mutual fund they have to sell you. You can go to your local mutual fund, bhaiya, uncle next door, who might be very well intentioned, but their knowledge is very limited to just mutual funds, and that too, to whether good or bad based on what they've heard. So you're really stuck. And I'm talking about people who have maybe about, you know, 10, 20 lakhs to a couple of crores in the bank, right? So at that level, you're taking your money seriously. But it's not big enough money where a private banker will show up, which is in the typically in the couple of millions minimum dollars, right? So that's 10 crores plus. So what do you do? I mean, and let's say you have a full-time job, whether it's in finance, in IT, tech, media. This is not your area of expertise investing, right? So you can try and build a parallel career to become a really good investor, or you flub around a bit and you try and guess what to do. So this is the problem statement we decided to address. We said we must solve this problem for this category of hardworking, busy professionals, as we call them, who have little time. They don't have many questions. They don't want to do daily trading, FNO, etc. Our platform doesn't have any of that because that's not the idea of Cube. You want to build a steady long-term portfolio that you check in once in a while. Once you set up your SIPs, it's autopilot. I set a challenge to my team that how infrequently does our user need to open our app? It's the inverse metric to every other app which counts DAUs and MAUs. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, you shouldn't That's open it. It should be on autopilot. We'll send you a monthly email which shows your portfolio. If you've set up a SIP, great. It'll debit it from your bank. Because the moment, and again, I use Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett very often, and I'm also reading a very interesting book right now by Palak Prasad of Nalanda. And one of his 3 points for successful investing. Now, I assume you guys know Nalanda, very successful investing firm. The third point, he says, don't be lazy investing. Be very lazy, right? And this is so interesting. It's probably the only thing in the world where you benefit if you don't take too many actions. It's when you get triggered by something you heard at a party or what a friend gave you as a tip and you make transactions based on that, that's when you're going to mess up and lose money. So Cube is designed along that philosophy, saying, you know, we used to joke, we should have called it Fill It, Forget It after that Hero Honda ad. It should be that way, right? Just fill it, forget it. Don't worry. Come back for when you need to have access to the money. And that's the ideal way to build it. So that's how we built it. Yeah. It's meant for people who are busy, who want somebody to take responsibility to guiding them to how to invest, even short term, instead of keeping money in their bank account, how you can use these alternative assets to get better returns, but not put too much in it. Our team very often tells our clients, you're putting it too much in alt assets, please reduce it. We are the only firm which probably tells you don't invest in our products beyond a limit. Where to put it in mutual funds? We also say don't put too much in mutual funds for the long term. That's where you can take a concentrated bet. So we've just integrated with Smallcase, which has 97 fund managers. From the 97, we took 2 months to shortlist about 3 fund managers, based on quality checks, etc. So all the stuff that you as an individual can't do, we take the painful work of doing that. We interviewed the fund managers. We looked at their past track records, their rolling returns, their investment philosophy. And then we only highlighted those in the app. So it's a bit of a long answer, but because it's a complex problem to solve, you know, I don't have a pithy one-liner on how I can explain it.
In fact, Satyan, I was going to say it will require a further more detailing to it, considering it's such a complicated space and there are so many models existing. Because I think when it comes to affluent, people have tried solving it completely by saying, I will dedicate a wealth manager and he will only work for you, which becomes super expensive, which only few very wealthy people can afford, to to someone saying that I will completely rely on technology and do something like a robo advisory where an algorithm will choose things for you, which also does not work out because it's a very hard earned money and people in India still want to talk to someone and not rely on algorithm completely because it's very, very customized. Yeah. So if you can explain that when a customer just comes in to Cube Wealth, what is a typical journey look like? I think that would really explain for a person who is just entering this space, who is affluent or working professional.
Sure, absolutely. First of all, I want to clarify, when I said affluent, I meant affluent middle class. We are not meant for the super rich who can get a private wealth manager, right? So we are talking about your, you know, you can start with as little as a couple of thousand rupees on Cube and then you can scale up from there. So the journey is threefold. One is, without being preachy, guiding you. So on iOS, we've already launched what's called Perfect Portfolio, and Android will be coming soon. In Perfect Portfolio, we ask you a lot of questions about your current life, your savings, your family, your job, your retirement plans, short-term plans, long-term plans. When do you want to buy a car, right? When does your kid go to college? What is the amount you assume you'll need at retirement based on your current income, etc.? So all of this is to enter it into a risk model which spits out a recommended portfolio for you. Now, it's your money. We are very respectful of that. You can adjust that how much ever you want, right? You can say, you know what? You guys think I should be aggressive, but I get palpitations when the market crashes. I'd rather be moderately risky. And like, fine, with a couple of toggles, change that setting. You have to be okay with it. Then once you get the recommendation, you can decide to start acting on it. This is where we have a very unique service where a wealth coach becomes available to you. And these are individuals, as you said, algorithms can't solve it, especially in a messy market like India. So we have individual attention that each client gets, where the existing portfolio can be sent to us for analysis. The new recommendations come in. And it's not that if you send us your existing mutual fund portfolio, we'll say, oh, it's all bekar, sell everything. No, no, no. If it's good stuff, it's kept in the portfolio. If it's average, we tell you it's average. You decide yes or no, sell or keep. And if it's really bad because we've flagged it from our advisor for mutual funds, Wealth First, we'd say, please get out of it. And the reason to do this, and this is free, is we want to take baby steps to make you understand that we are here for the long term with you. We only benefit as a business if you see good returns from our platform and you stay with us for the long term. This is not a quick sales job where we have quarterly targets. Nobody has targets, by the way, in the team. And another unique thing, everybody in the team invests in all these assets that you see on Cube before any of our customers sees them on the app. So two sidebar items. So second step is, once you agree, then you start investing. There too, we've taken many painful steps to simplify the KYC, which is usually the pain point. So if you enter your Aadhaar number for one asset, you just don't need to repeat that for the next asset. We reuse the data. Everything is done through the app. You buy the assets that you want, and we have about 10 different asset categories now, through the app itself. You can set up a SIP one time so that all the assets can have debits happening on that. And that's it. So that's your purchase history, first time or on a monthly basis. You can even set the date you want the SIP to be done, all of that. And then the third stage is where I'm very proud of it. We've simplified how you track your portfolio. You know, it's one, what we call the cube phase. We said, what does a person really care about? An average person who's not an investment expert, they care about what's my portfolio amount and whether I have a profit or loss. Show it to me in a normalized fashion, and the profit loss in percentage terms, annualize it. Don't give me different terms, which is since inception, 3-year period, because in across assets, I can't compare it across my portfolios. So that's it. Total amount, profit lost in rupees, and percentage per year that you've lost or gained across the portfolio. That's it. We just show that, and that makes it simple for you to know whether your portfolio is doing well or no. And we love that simplicity. So three steps: analysis, action, and then tracking.
So then you spoke about how you're utilizing relationship managers to give a personal touch to your customers. I'm also curious on how you're leveraging technology to help these RMs or relationship advisors serve a larger number of customers. So if you could delve a little bit into the technology behind CubeWealth as well, that would be useful.
So one of the things we had at Citrus, which always dismayed me as a software guy, was we had an ops team of 300 people.
and that's insane. Like,
sorry?
That's pretty insane. 300
it
people.
It is insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it was much smaller than other payment companies, but it was still 300 people. And I'm like, we are a software company. What are these guys doing? How do we automate it, right? And it was too late in the game. So we couldn't because the business was rolling along, blah, blah. So what we did as an early decision at Cube is we said we are not going to make this a hyper-growth, hyper-funded company. So we want to focus on automation everywhere that we can. So from day one, a lot of our back-end systems are inbuilt. We have an inbuilt CRM system, an inbuilt in-house sales panel, in-house dashboards that we use as a team. So the entire portfolio we manage is managed by one ops person right now, and we are very happy about it. Whenever we see a problem that keeps recurring, we actually divert resources from building consumer-facing stuff to building the in-house stuff. And we are a very small team, guys. So we are only 15 people, which includes consulting partners. So full-time, it's 10 people. So it's a lot of thinking that we do instead of brute force work, because we know this is the only way to scale up, and we'll come to the business model in a bit as well, which is a bit of a challenge in this space. So we use a lot of this technology in-house. We do integrations deeply with our asset partners. We do retry mechanisms. We've pushed many of these new age asset partners to build better APIs, because we know we'll suffer and our customers will suffer if they don't.
Right.
So what appears on the surface to a customer saying, you're just showing me portfolio and profit loss, behind the scenes is all the magic which makes it look so simple and work so well.
And Satyan, if you look at the investor data or people who regularly trade in stocks or invest, there was earlier a significant amount of geographic concentration. But as India is evolving, of course, the trends are shifting. So as you see the people who are coming on to CubeWealth, the sort of people are coming, the segment they're coming from, geography they're coming on, do you see any interesting trends there which you have seen it changing over a period of time?
So when we started out, we were seeing the maximum customer count from Bangalore and Bombay, and which made sense, right? And
right.
About 6-7 years ago, this is where we were known in the circles. We had a lot of startup founders who became club customers, so they spread the word to their teams, etc. Now it's more than 100 plus zip codes, more than 10 countries across the world. And which is not surprising, because our referral rate is our biggest customer acquisition engine. And it's again the long game. Nobody refers us on day one. They typically put a small amount first. If we do an okay job, they add to that amount. They wait a year or two to see if they are getting decent returns before they start telling their friends about it. So now we are about 6 years, coming up to 6 years. And that's why our referral rate has really jumped, because we've taken that painful long path of saying no shortcuts, no mis-selling. Let's try and build profitable portfolios for all our customers. And so the 10 countries we have also, now we are seeing a very, obviously India is in the limelight. So we are seeing NRIs all over figuring out how to start in India. And unless you buy a fund of funds or you have somebody who can do all the paperwork on the ground, word of mouth is spreading that just use something like Cube. It's simple. You can control it from anywhere. And they also have wealth coaches that you can reach out, which is a very important part, because people need to talk to a human about money. Not too often, because it is a boring subject, but you need to know somebody's available, right? And one WhatsApp call, it's a direct number to an individual, not a service center, not a chatbot.
And two callbacks on this one, Satyan. Going back to the point that you were saying, the waves, right? The wave was no one was trying to invest in the stock market, either directly in the stocks or via mutual funds. From that point of view, the interesting part is I have few family members slightly on the tier two, tier three sides. And in recent times, because the barriers have been reduced, on mobile phone, they have started trading. but not trading, but investing, so to say. But their investments are very two wrong channels of information, I would say. One is, of course, someone says, I know someone who made a lot of money by putting money in this particular area or this particular stock. So, of course, they're putting money. And this person came to me showing I invested in stock A. In 1 week, I have made like doubled the money. Now, it is good that people are investing, but not understanding that it was a small cap and the risk of losing money is as much as that you've just made money in 2-3 days is a big problem. So I definitely see once that person goes through that cycle, he would understand that he would require more support and help to really understand how to balance things and invest. Right? That's one. So I completely agree with you on that part as well.
No, so it's a very good point, actually, because people think it's easy money. And they need to learn it, right? Once in a while, you get lucky. You get lucky when you go to a casino also, once in a while. But that's not a strategy to how to build long-term wealth. And what we see in our TG guys is something similar, because our platform doesn't even let you search for any mutual fund you want to buy. We say, no, you don't know. So we don't see customers in their 20s. We don't see first-time investors coming to us. We typically see the person who's been burnt once. Like, okay, now I need help. So a typical TG is 30s, 40s, 50s. We are definitely not the first platform of choice. They might have gone through Grow or something or Zerodha. And they're like, yeah, it's not as easy as it looks. So we are fine with that. And which is why also, to be very honest, our growth is much slower than the other DIY platforms. Because people in India have just started this journey, they need to go through that first phase of pain and learning before they say, I need expert advice. And that's why we are building this for the long term. We are like, you know, you one day you will come to us.
Now, let's get to the million-dollar question, Satyan. How does Cube Wealth make money?
So we should call it a million-rupee question. So
$1 million is not a lot.
I know. These are the dynamics of the Indian fintech ecosystem. So, you know, one of the other triggers for me to push everybody to sell CitrusPay was UPI had just launched.
Right.
In 2015, I think, I was finishing some meetings in Delhi and I was in a cab back to the airport where some reporter we had good terms with called, I think, from ET and said, I just attended this event at NPCI and UPI is launching. What do you guys think about it? And I had to scramble my thoughts on the fly. And I'm like, oh, it's excellent for the ecosystem. It'll destroy cash, etc. But it really left this nagging fear saying all the economics of the business are going to be crushed here. Mm. And this is, I think, true of India in many, many segments, in fintech especially. That other than with the exception of lending right now, there aren't very easy ways to make money. So at Cube Wealth, when we started and we were plotting our business model, we said, look, we are not going to miss-sell. It's not a choice.
Right.
Integrity is our first principle for the team, for our customers. So we're not going to sell high-margin products just because they make money. And there are high-margin products in the market, guys. In investing, you can easily make 15, 20% commissions. I'm not even talking about whole life insurance. I'm talking about PMSs, etc., where those are the deals that you can obtain when you are a distributor. He said, we are not going to do that. We want to build something that is right by the customer, because when you get a 15% commission, that's 15% returns gone from the customer right away, right? So it's been a tough road to figure out the business model. You can make between 0.5% to maybe 1.5-2% of a product. What it means is if you want to build high quality advisory, you need to keep your costs low, you need to have your CAC low, and you need to play the long game. Because the moment it's the short term game, you have pressure from the board. If you overcapitalize yourself, how are you going to show those numbers? You're going to have to resort to some sort of mis-selling or something else. Yeah. That's my theory, right? I'm not saying I know anything about what anybody else is doing. I just don't see any other option out there. So it's a tough business model to make a lot of money, but the hope is the Indian economy keeps growing. And, you know, there are three exponential factors that you can assume. One is that our customers, the kind of mass affluent customers, will grow in their income. So if you build their trust, they'll keep giving us more money. Two is their money grows in the platform, it starts earning us more fees because we work on a percentage basis. Right. And so both these are exponential. And the third exponential factor is that as we win their trust over the long term, they are going to recommend us to their friends, family, spouses, etc. So these are the three long-term plays we are counting on to have a good business model. But it's far from being proven.
Understood. And in fact, Satyan, this answer reminded me of the point that I lost there. But that good point, you brought that up. Because if you see, once the person has gone through that risk, the second place people are looking for advice is the free advice. People like financial influencers, some of them are good, but a lot of them are just advising, which is free advice. And they're hyping things up, right? What it will lead to is people over a period of time will also understand that when you want good advice, you may have to pay a bit for it. And the amount that you're paying for good advice is nowhere compared to the amount of benefits that you would get out of it. So as customers, we start maturing, especially the professional side of the customer that you are serving, I'm very sure that this intention of paying for good advice would also keep on increasing as people go through this cycle of investing journey.
You know, I hope more people think as sensibly as you do, because, you know, it's such a simple mathematical decision here, right? When I pay $600 for Netflix a month, I have no direct correlation whether it's worth the money, right? Because it's entertainment time versus what I'm paying. Here, it's a very simple mathematical equation. What you pay, am I making more because of what I paid? Or am I making the same as the market index? Or am I making less? We truly, and we tell our customers, right? So our mutual funds on our platform are not direct funds. They are regular funds. They're like, guys, our advisor for mutual funds, Wealth First, manages more than $1 billion. For 20 years, they've beaten the mutual fund average returns by 50% every year, based on their recommendations and their expertise. Why do you think they're going to do this for free for you? Right? Nobody's doing charity. And even Cube, the little bit we make, we are a small team, but we need to keep the lights on. We need to pay our team. You're enjoying the simplicity of the app. It doesn't come for free. So net-net, if you're making more using us than what the average market person is making, what do you care about the fees? You're winning anyway. So people are getting there. People are getting there, but not everybody's there. And then people have hacks around it. I know for a fact some of the simple hacks, right? Look at the fund recommendations we have and go buy it on a direct platform. And you're like, well, if you have that much time to manage your money, A, go for it. And because, you know, I like to live my life. This is not the main thing. And second is we are building some smart hooks there where we are like, you know, nobody tells you when to sell a mutual fund.
Correct.
And our policy is our advisor tells us when to get out of a mutual fund. They made a few calls over the last few years that have been very prescient, just in time before some crisis. Like, for example, when some mutual funds were heavy on Yes Bank and they told us 6 months before, get out, right? And we pass that to our clients. And so that's the advice we only give clients who've bought that mutual fund on our platform. It's not available for free. So buying, you can come in and browse for free, but nobody's going to tell you to sell if you're not on the Cube platform. And this is going back to one of the most important rules of investing, which is preserve your core capital. If your principal should not go down, right? And that's what we emphasize. And this is one of the many benefits of what we do with this partner.
Satyan, looking ahead to 2024, I know the year has just started. So what's on the roadmap for you at Cube Wealth in this year?
So we are very boring, Elroy. we've tried a lot of experiments in the last 6 years. And we are we kill features in the app all the time. In fact, we are just going through a whole cleanup exercise to remove a lot of things in the app right now that complicated for no good reason. So we've done two major things last year that we are very excited about. One is our integration with Smallcase that I mentioned. So we can rotate very quickly through different advisors and showcase them on our platform. And the other big integration we did was with Grip, which is the alternative asset marketplace. So same thing there, we can rotate through different offerings, different categories of alt assets very quickly without lots of months of integration and testing. So we want to capitalize on that in 2024 to show a much faster velocity of interesting high quality products on the app. Second is clean up the app. What we do keep a lookout for is things such as the account aggregation system as it matures, how we can use it to give our users better analysis of their portfolio. But, you know, as of now, it's maybe too early. It would complicate our users' life too much. Another thing we've looked at is if customers are interested in getting loans from based on their portfolio. And again, it's an interesting concept coming up, but we haven't seen a huge demand for that. But, you know, these are typically what we like to do. We just like to take slow steps, keep building the ship. By the way, we have 6 quarters of being profitable. So we are very excited about that. So it's a sturdy, simple business, and we keep taking experimental risks, but nothing that can affect the quality of our service.
Congratulations on that, Sachin. It's very, very rare for a fintech to be profitable, let's say.
Thank you. And trust me, I'm the most relieved. One, fundraising by far is my least favorite activity as an entrepreneur. And two, for till we found this kind of profitable path, I was funding the company after we ran out of our VC money of 2016. I was self-funding it. And I was like, guys, can we see a path where I stop cutting a check every month for a large amount? And full credit to the team, they've delivered. And you're absolutely right, it's very rare. But you know, that is the irony of it, right? When did we say that it's rare for a business to make money?
Make profits.
I know.
Yeah, it's become the norm, right? That you say tech, you don't need to make money. No. There are some businesses sure need to do hyper growth.
In fact, people look at you suspiciously if you're making money.
I'm telling you, you know, you say this jokingly, but one of the side effects is future funders say, if you're profitable, we'll do a multiplier on your earnings. Like, why? You never did it for Citrus when you were loss making. Why are you holding it? Absolutely. We're not making that much money that you can apply a multiplier. So joys of figuring it out, but we are going to build it for the next 20 years. So we'll laugh about it in the 20 year journey.
That's very, very heartening to hear. Thanks a ton for joining us and speaking with us today, Sachin. If our listeners want to learn more about Cube Wealth and get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
The best way is absolutely our website, Bank on Cube, or just download the app, Cube Wealth. It's no cost to you. You can play around if you're on iOS with the perfect portfolio builder. On Android, we have lots of recommendations. You can also ask to speak to a wealth coach. I would say step one is just download the app. You'll enjoy the experience of how simple it is, whether you invest or no. Having said that, you know, there's a famous, I think, Chinese proverb saying, the best time to plant a tree was 10 years ago. The second best time is today. So I recommend to everybody, we are entering into this mega, mega growth era for India. It's going to be an amazing time. And it's silly if you have money that you don't invest it to take advantage, being Indians, and build up your future for 10, 20 years from now. I mean, it's just irresponsible if you don't do this. So please start, whether you want to try it yourself on some platform, whether you want to use Cube, of course. But I recommend to everybody, please start putting some money to investing in monthly SIPs. Don't get greedy. Don't go on a stock tip. Put a monthly amount so you balance, average out the ups and downs of the market, and just build it for the long term, guys. We'll all be happier and richer 10, 20 years from now if we do it today.
Absolutely. And to help people start that journey, we'll include the links to the Android app and to the iOS app in our show notes. Thanks once again for joining us today, Sachin.
Thank you, Hemant. Thank you, Elroy, so much. I really enjoyed the conversation.
That's it from India FinTech Diaries for this week. Do log on to our website, indiafintechdiaries.com, for show notes and other exclusive content. Until next time, stay safe.